Time for a message. Brother Elder Allen will come and present the message.
Greetings, one and all. One more we should add to the list, I understand, is Sister Loretta's daughter, who is also dealing with a trial at this time. Who is this? I am verily a man, which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward Elohim, as you all are this day. And I persecuted this way unto the death, binding and delivering into prisons both men and women. Also, the high priest doth bear me witness, and all the estate of the elders, from whom also I received letters unto the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring them which were bound unto Jerusalem for to be punished. And it came to pass that as I made my journey and was come nigh unto Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light about me. And I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying unto me, I remove the name here, asking, why persecutest thou me? And I answered, who are you, Master? And he said unto me, I am Yahshua of Nazareth, whom you persecute. Of course, this is the apostle known as Paul, his true name, Shaul. Other than our Savior himself, no one in the Bible personifies the true strength of an overcomer in the light of adversity, as does this man here. And I want to talk about him today because it seems like as we approach Yahweh's days, we're refocusing our lives and refocusing our attention, and we should be, on what Yahweh wants us to do and to rekindle that drive and that desire we had and should have for him. This man is an incredible study in contrast. A persecutor of the assembly early on in his life, he becomes the staunchest defender of the faith in the latter part of his life. Testimony to the fact that even dreadful people can change. He had just the right stuff Yahweh was looking for. He was a bulldog. He never gave up, no matter what. He's a man so misunderstood by churchianity, he's been embraced as the number one repudiator of the law, which he demonstrated in Acts 21 was completely false. He even said so himself, and people still believe it. He said, I'm not here to do away with the commandments. And people say Paul did away with the commandments. He said in Acts 24:14, he believed all things written in the law and the prophets. Believing is the Greek pistou, and it means to think to be true, to be persuaded, to credit, to place confidence in. This is how he looked at the law. Doesn't sound much like a man who detests the law to me, who just couldn't wait to tell all the scattered assemblies in Asia Minor that they're now free of the Torah. Well, as we prepare for the coming Passover, and we look again at the atoning death of Yahshua, and examine our own lives, I want to briefly consider the life of this man, because he has a lot of lessons for us. And the work of a man who came to understand the truth and the purpose of suffering as few have ever done. The passage I read from was from Acts 22. This whole scene, the whole reason that he says what he did, is that some were accusing him of being antinomian. That means against the law. A prophet named Agabus in Acts 21:10 had warned Paul that if he went to Jerusalem, he'd be bound and taken by the Gentiles and taken before the Gentiles, and all sorts of bad things were going to happen to him. His amazing response in verse 13 of Acts 21 is this. Then Paul answered, what mean ye to weep and to break my heart? For I am ready, not to be bound only, but also to die at Jerusalem for the name of Yahshua the Messiah. That was his response. I'm ready to be bound. I'm ready to die if need be. In the name of Yahshua the Messiah. Break my heart. Here was an individual so driven by the goal of teaching what he loved as the truth to those who didn't know, that he said it broke his heart to tell him, no, you better not go. You might be murdered for the truth. I can't believe it, he says. I can't believe you'd say that to me. This is my mission. This is my entire purpose and goal in life. This is my reason for being. Why are you telling me don't go? That's absurd. That's outrageous. I'm going. End of discussion. Do you get the impression we're looking at an incredible man here? Very extraordinary man. How many of us would boldly and enthusiastically walk into a cave of grizzly bears, knowing the outcome? Swish our bare feet around in a pit of rattlesnakes. Run crisscross through a field of dirty with landmines. To go into a city where the hatred is so out of control that guaranteed they'll tie you up and proceed to kill you? Yes, I know. And I go, was Paul's response. I knew an elder one time who had the opportunity to go to the Philippines. His way was going to be paid for him. People hungering for the truth. And he wouldn't go. Because he'd have to sleep in someone's home on a thin little mat with some mosquito netting over him because there was no Best Western nearby. Look what this man did. Look what this man suffered. What's wrong with us? Let's read Acts 21 and verse 20. And when they heard it, they glorified the master and said unto him, you see, brother, how many thousands of Jews there are which believe, and they are all zealous of the law. He's saying, we have some converted Jews here who believe. They believe in Yahshua. They believe in the truth. And they're zealous for the law. And they are informed of you that you teach all the Jews which are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, neither walk after the customs. What is it therefore? Okay, out with it. What's the truth? Demonstrate what you believe. We want to know. Finally, once and for all. For they're going to hear that you're coming, Paul. We want to know. What is the truth? We keep hearing these rumors. Over and over and over and around they go. You don't believe in the law. You teach against the law. All of that. We want to know. Do therefore this, that we say to you. Okay, here's the deal. We have four men here which have a vow on them. Take them, purify yourself with them, and be at charges with them, that they may shave their heads, and all may know that those things which they are informed about you are baloney. Nothing. But that you yourself also walk orderly and what? Last part of verse 24, keep the law. What did he do? He did it to prove that he did. Keep the law, verse 26. Then Paul took the men, and the next day, purifying himself with them, entered into the temple to signify the accomplishment of the days of purification, until that an offering should be offered for every one of them. And when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews which were of Asia, when they saw him in the temple, stirred up all the people and laid hands on him, crying out, men of Israel, help! This is the man, grab him, that teaches all men everywhere against the people and the law in this place, and further brought Greeks also into the temple, oh heavens, and has polluted this holy place. So, he brought a man named Trophimus to worship, but that wasn't their big problem. Big problem was they still believed he was there to abolish, obliterate the law. So after he's granted to speak with his persecutors, he proceeds with his testimony, which we have just heard in Acts 22. Let's look at verse 3. Let's start verse 1, Acts 22:1. Men, brethren, and fathers, hear you my defense, which I make now unto you. And when they heard that he spake in the Hebrew tongue to them, they kept more the silence. And he says, I'm going to give his little bio here, his biography. He says, I am verily a man, which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, city of Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward Elohim, as all you are this day. He was born in Tarsus, the capital of the Roman province of Cilicia. Elsewhere we read that he was of the tribe of Benjamin, which isn't considered equivalent to Judah, because they're both together. So he was considered a Jew, a Roman Jew. He studied at the feet of a member of the Sanhedrin, a renowned teacher of Yahweh's law. Acts 5:34. Let's look at that real quickly. One of the famous men, teachers, taught this man, Paul, right at his feet. Here's an example of this man, this Gamaliel. Then stood up there one of the council, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a doctor of the law. He was a professor at Harvard. Had in reputation among all the people, and commanded to put the apostles forth a little space, and said unto them, you men of Israel, take heed to yourselves what you intend to do as touching these men. This guy had some insight. He wasn't just a secular man, secular scholar. He had some insight. He says, you better watch how you handle these disciples. For before these days rose up Theudas, boasting himself to be somebody, to whom a number of men, about 400, joined themselves, who was slain, and all, as many as obeyed him, were scattered and brought to nothing. Here's an example of somebody who didn't have Yahweh's approval. What happened to him? Disintegrated. After this man rose up Judas of Galilee in the days of the taxing, and drew away much people after him. You think we have problems that were never existent before? You got it way back there. He also perished, and all as many as obeyed him were dispersed. And now I say unto you, refrain from these men, and let them alone. For if this counsel of this work be of men, it will come to naught. But if it be of Yahweh, you cannot overthrow it, lest by chance you be found even to fight against Yahweh. Little insight into this teacher of Paul. He had some spiritual understanding. So he tells them, watch what you say, because if these people are right, if they're actually what they say they are, they're going to be of Yahweh, then you've really got something to answer for. Every Jew was taught a trade as a boy so that he might become self-supporting. Paul was a maker of tents, some say little portable tents, when you're on a journey, ancient RVs, basically. You can get these little tents, you could, you know, set them up somewhere, and there you are. Acts 18:3. Today we spend tens of thousands of dollars to send a child to college so they can get a history or art or political science degree and come out of school with no marketable skills to support them in the real world. And no one ever tells them their degree is not going to help them. Almost useless. Let alone all the liberal atheistic doctrination they get when they receive that degree along with it, that does them enormous harm spiritually. One sister was telling me her daughter used to be interested in the Bible, came out of school, now she's virtually an atheist. That's what you get today. Well, they taught a trade back then. The Jews learned something. Each family member could do something useful. I'm not saying that anybody goes to school is useless. Of course not. But, you know, there's things to go into and there's things not to go into. And it's sometimes I think it's just the greed of these colleges to get this tuition money and then leave people with nothing they can use. Anyway, nobody who has talent can really be effective in Yahweh's work unless he or she is under the supervision of Yahweh's Spirit. And Paul's background and knowledge of Yahweh's law, great though it was by human standards, was nevertheless not enough. Because before his conversion, he reasoned and acted like an unconverted man. He drew these people out, said, hey, we don't want you around. and brought them into prison. These were true believers that he was persecuting. And not only that, when they were killed, he was standing there approving it. Gave his stamp of approval as a representative of the Sanhedrin. His decisions resulted in misery and death for many, many people. He was not a nice guy. Put it plainly, Paul was not a nice guy back then. But he was about to undergo a dramatic change. Acts 22, verse 4. 22, verse 4. And I persecuted this way. That's what they call true believers. People of this way or that way. It was only the Gentiles, the Greeks, that called them Christians. They called themselves this way. Unto the death, binding and delivering into prisons both men and women. And also the high priest does bear me witness, and all the estate of the elders, from whomsoever I received letters unto the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring them which were there bound unto Jerusalem for to be punished. I was on a journey, and I was zealous, and I was going to get these people, and I was going to bring them back to Jerusalem, and they were in for it. And then in verse 20 we read, and when the blood of your martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by and consenting unto his death, and I kept the coats of them that slew him. Remember old Stephen, martyr, looked up to heaven and said, you know, Yahweh, don't put this charge to them. Don't blame them. Something echoed by Joshua even later. But there's Paul. Yeah, go ahead. Throw the stone. I'll hold your coat. Acts 26, verse 9. Paul in his early days was not a nice man. I verily thought with myself that I ought to do many things contrary to the name of Yahshua the Messiah. Which thing I also did in Jerusalem, and many of the saints did I shut up in prison, having received the authority from the chief priests. And when they were put to death, I gave my voice against them. Fine with him. And I punished them often in every synagogue and compelled them to blaspheme. Forced them to blaspheme Yahweh's name. And being exceedingly mad against them, I persecuted them unto strange cities. I didn't let them rest. I chased them hill and dale. I went after them. I wasn't going to let one of them get away. A hatred. He had a hatred for the truth. Galatians 1:13, again, he says, if you have heard of my, for you have heard of my conversation in time past, my manner of life, is what he's saying, in the Jews' religion, how that beyond measure I persecuted the assembly of Yahweh and wasted it. And he was even, he says in verse 14, more zealous in my zeal in doing this than my fathers. The conversion of this individual is nothing less, brethren, than a miracle. But why him? Could his background of persecution maybe be a catalyst that made him an even better evangelist? Don't you believe that in the back of his mind, for the rest of his life, when he went out preaching, when he went out teaching, were always those dirty little secrets of his former behavior? They had to have been there. You know they were. That he killed saints in his pre-conversion days. And this knowledge helped drive him relentlessly in a desire maybe to atone for what he had done, to set things straight by being that much more zealous and brave for the truth. You have to believe it was. It was this driving force that helped him say, if I go to Jerusalem, I die. Because anyway, I deserve it for what I have done. I'll happily go out in a blaze of glory because that's what I deserve in the first place. I have to believe this is part of what drove this man. In other words, the man had nothing to lose and everything to gain. The turning point in his life was his spectacular conversion. He actually saw and heard Yahshua himself on the road to Damascus while he was on his way to persecute more believers. And from Yahshua himself, he got his commission. Acts chapter 9, verse 1. And Saul, Shaul, yet breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the disciples of the Master, went into the high priest and desired of him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any of this way, whether they were men or women, he might bring them bound into Jerusalem. What was their crime? Believing in the truth. And as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven. And he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Shaul, Shaul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who are you, Master? And the Master said, I am Yahshua, whom you persecute. It is hard for you to kick against the pricks. He said, You're hurting yourself by what you're doing here. And he, trembling and astonished, said, Master, what will you have me to do? And he said unto him, Arise, go into the city, and it shall be told what you must do. And the men which journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no one. And Saul, Shaul, rose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no man. But led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus, and he was 3 days without sight, and neither did eat nor drink. So here is the conversion. Here is the scene. This man, he just crazy with anger, going after these people and can't wait till he can get there. Poof, a light comes on and down he goes. Yahweh knocked him straight down, under the ground. He becomes blind. That was the turning point of his life. I can think of no person in Scripture other than Yahshua who suffered after this more intensely than the man we call Paul. Yeah, Job had it rough, sure, but it seems like his persecution, his trial, I should say, was concentrated in a more briefer time than Paul. This guy had problems the rest of his ministry. You know, you can suffer on many levels for the truth, and many of us have. Physically, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. There's lots of ways you can suffer. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Let's continue on. He's again, giving us some insight into him as a believer, him as a minister of the truth. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Messiah? I speak as a fool. I am more. He says, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths often. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. 5 times he got beaten within an inch of his life. 3 times I was beaten with rods. They caned him. Once I was stoned. My goodness. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. So he even had natural disasters befall him. A night and a day, I've been in the deep, floating on a little board, just trying to keep up above water, keeping alive. In journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils by my own countrymen, and that's the worst kind, in perils of the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. In weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and in thirst, in fastings often. Well, I imagine this man fasted like you wouldn't believe. Seeking help. to continue on. In cold, in nakedness, besides those things that are without, that which comes upon me daily, I have the care of all the assemblies to go with it. And they're all scattering every which way in their beliefs like people do. And I got to keep rounding them up and bringing them back. No, that's false. Here's the truth. No, you're getting off on a tangent. You're getting off into a false teaching there. Come back. No, that man shouldn't be with that person. That's immoral. Stop it. I mean, on and on. I mean, he's got to do this along with just surviving. Who is weak and I'm not weak? Who is offended and I burn not? I think that's something that people really don't understand. They really don't understand. When you're part of an assembly, somebody's hurting, everybody hurts. Somebody gets offended, everyone gets offended. I don't think we understand how much we affect each other. Paul says, look, whatever they're feeling, I'm feeling it too. If I must needs glory, I will glory of the things which concern my infirmities. I've got nothing to boast about, but if I'm going to boast, it'll be how much I've suffered for Yahweh's truth. And the Elohim of the Father of our Master Yahshua, which is blessed forevermore, knows that I lie not. There has never been a minister of Yahshua who has had more to overcome and more to deal with than this man here. On top of that, then they misconstrue what he teaches. His core teaching is twisted. Can you think of anyone today who could handle anything like this going on? Who could really put up with this? Without the Spirit, I don't think anybody could. Certainly Paul couldn't survive. No one could do it. But lest you think we're done looking at this man's problems, think again. Turn to 2 Corinthians 12:7. And lest I should be exalted above measure, through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh. Now he's got a messenger of Satan to buffet him, lest I should be exalted above measure, to keep him humble, to keep him cognizant of the fact that he's just a human being and nothing more. He's got something in the flesh that's bothering him, a chronic problem. And he said, I besought the Master three times, Yahweh three times, that it might depart from me, but it wasn't taken away. So he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Okay, he says, I'm not going to be relieved of this affliction, but it's there for a reason. And it's there to keep me humble and to keep me aware of who I really am. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Messiah may rest upon me. He says, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, verse 10, in distresses, for Messiah's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. You see, when we're being humbled, when we come to the point we realize I am nothing, that's the point when Yahweh can actually use us. We've got that nature, that human nature, you know, that gets in the way. And Yahweh can't do anything as long as it's there. That has to be subjugated. That has to be put down. And we have to be willing to say, hey, I am nothing. Use me the way you want to use me, Yahweh. And then he will. What is this problem he had? Been lots of speculation. I think the answer is in Galatians chapter 4, verse 13. He says, you know how through infirmity of the flesh I preached the good news unto you at the first, and my temptation which was in my flesh you despised not, nor rejected, but received me as an angel of Elohim, even as Messiah Yahshua. Verse 15, where is then the blessedness you spake of? For I bear you record that if it had been possible, you would have plucked out your own eyes and given them to me. They would have given him their eyes if they could. Sounds like he's got a vision problem. Galatians chapter 6, verse 11. He says, "You see how large a letter I have written unto you with my own hand." He doesn't mean, you know, a ream of paper. Large a letter. He's talking about font size. He's talking about size of the letters. Big letters. Because he didn't have good eyes. How with large letters, the Greek says. Maybe too many stones hit him in the head. Maybe blinding on the road to Damascus had an effect. Perhaps. But anyway, on top of all that he carried out in his ministry, he's got this physical handicap. He suffered more than most believers ever will in 6 lifetimes. But in his suffering, he learned a lesson very few will learn, that Yahweh's strength is made perfect in weakness. This implies that human wisdom, wealth, fame, talent, and strength generally get in the way of truth. Suffering is the lot of mankind, believers as well as unbelievers. We're in this world because of sin. We have to put up with a lot of suffering. The difference is that when a true believer suffers, he has the assurance that his suffering has a purpose, and he knows that his suffering is there to make a change in him. One day we'll all fully understand why Yahweh allowed us to suffer at certain times. It's easy to complain, you know, when suffering strikes home and family. But when you begin to complain, think on these things. Think on 2 Timothy 3:12. All that will live righteously in Messiah shall suffer persecution. Paul left in his writings a heritage of letters that impacted the world more than any other could ever have done. The most famous poets and scholars have never had the influence of this man because he wrote much of the New Testament. When you read Paul, you're reading his personal mail. You're reading his letters to these different assemblies, dealing with their problems, encouraging them, teaching them, straightening them out. He analyzed human motives. He examined spiritual meaning. He talked about repentance, mercy, faith, grace, obedience, humility, love. He showed us the weakness and the strength of individuals and assemblies. His letters are often difficult to understand, and some believe he swept aside the commandments of Yahweh by what he wrote. But by his own testimony, he said, "I did nothing of the sort." He went deeper than most in explaining a lot of spiritual concepts. And that's what makes him difficult at times. We're trying to figure out exactly what he's trying to say. He never contradicted the message of the word. And in no way did he ever intend his writings to be replaced, or to replace, I should say, the rest of Yahweh's word, or his laws, which he gave through Moses. He was trained, remember, in the law by one of the greatest professors of his time. Why would he come along and denounce all those teachings that he's learned? Even Peter said Paul's writings in 2 Peter 3:15 are hard to be understood. Now, wait a minute. Peter said this. Why is it a shock that we have some trouble with his writings? Peter says even I have a little bit of difficulty trying to understand what he's saying at times. Verse 16, as in all his epistles, speaking in them of these things, in which are some things hard to be understood, which they that are unlearned and unstable rest, as they do also the other scriptures, unto their own destruction. They take them, they don't understand them, they go off on a bunny trail. They twist them, and next thing you know, they got a new teaching. Ye therefore, beloved, seeing you know these things, therefore beware also, being led away with the error of the wicked, fall from your own steadfastness. I'm warning you, Peter says, be careful when dealing with Paul. Don't get twisted up. Unlearned and unstable. Two characteristics that mark those who cause problems even today. They're either unlearned or they're unstable. One way or the other. Mentally maybe, but mostly spiritually unstable. They come along with some teaching. You know, I get emails almost every day from people. Check out this website. You know, this will straighten you out. Check them out. They got the truth. They come along with some teaching they discovered on the internet, and suddenly they're an expert. They know more than the subject of all the elders who have studied the topic all their lives. Ordained teachers who have plumbed the depths of the Hebrew and the Greek, supporting structures, and have studied all the alternative opinions and have proved them flawed from the scriptures. They prove them over and over and over to be wrong. And then the next guy comes along, hey, have you seen this teaching? Yeah, about 40 years ago. But that doesn't faze the experts, the self-appointed experts. They're right and you're wrong. Never mind that Yahweh called and instructed and ordained certain men by his spirit to present truth to people. That doesn't matter. These are the experts. The result is that the corporate body of believers continues to fragment. Mountains of contradictory teachings out there have served to confuse and discourage and turn off people who would seek the truth. It takes a special person, brethren, to hold on to the truth today. 25 years ago, that wasn't the issue. 25 years ago, people really had a sincere desire in doing what the Word instructs. The Bible, frankly, is losing its influence with a new generation today. So here's a warning, and especially to those who are habitual surfers of the internet, be careful of what you see online. Just because it's published on a website or in a tract or a booklet or on TV doesn't make it automatically legitimate and true. And the only thing that proves the truth of any teaching is how it harmonizes with the Word. Yahshua said, be careful, over and over. Don't be deceived. Statistics show that half the people now are online. And the more popular the web gets, and the more easy people learn it is to publish on the web, there's going to be lots more ideas out there. Be careful. Oh, it's a great tool, and it helps us greatly. But at the same time, you know, it seems like when the truth is there, here comes the old evil one, ready to pervert it all. There's a lot of error out there. And it's only going to get more intense. And there are a lot of blind leading a lot of blind. And Yahshua over and over warned about that. All too soon, we reach the end of the road. You know, the years fly by, and all of a sudden, we awake to the realization that life has zoomed by. For many, it's a time of regret, wasted years. Man, I wish I'd done that. Man, I wish I had known that years ago. All these years I've wasted, done nothing. Wasted money, wasted opportunities, whatever. For others, it's a time to look back and take stock of, you know, what's been done in your life. For the believer, we do this regularly each time a feast comes along. We examine what we believe. We look at our lives. How am I doing? Am I doing right? Do I need to change? Do I need to make changes? We do it regularly all year long. That's what one of the things Yahweh's feasts teach us. We rededicate. We recalibrate those spiritual beacons, you know. Get them zoomed in right again. Because sometimes they get off. We can get off. And that's one of the advantages and one of the blessings of an assembly, that someone gets off, you know, way offline. They can bounce it off others, and they can say, oh, wait a minute, no, did you consider this scripture? Oh, no, I never thought about that. And they can get back in sync again with the truth. Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 5, takes an assessment at the end of his life and the work, and he tells us about it. So let's read about it. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 5. But watch you in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of your ministry, he says. For I know, or I am now ready, he says, to be offered. He almost looks at himself as a sacrifice. And the time of my departure is at hand. I hope that we can read verse 7 and apply it to our own lives. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Can we say that at the end of our lives? Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which Yahweh, the righteous judge, shall give me in that day, and not to me only, but to all them also that love his appearing. Then he goes on, even now he gets a little more personal. He says, do diligence to come shortly unto me. For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed unto Thessalonica. Guy named Demas, he says, I've had it. I'm leaving. I'm gone. This is too much for me. Crescens goes to Galatia. Titus went to Dalmatia. He says, only Luke is with me. Take Mark, bring him with me, with you, for he is profitable to me for the ministry. And Tychicus have I sent to Ephesus. And the cloak, the coat that I left at Troas with Carpus. You're getting very personal. I mean, when you read this, you read this man, his very personal letters. He says, take my coat, you know, bring the books, especially the parchments. Oh, and by the way, there's this guy named Alexander the coppersmith. He did much evil to me. Yahweh reward him according to his works. We don't think that we have problems as well. If this is, you know, something new, no. Of whom he also, you were also, for he has greatly withstood our words. This guy is contradictory. At my first answer, no man stood with me, but all men forsook me. I pray Elohim that it may not be laid to their charge. Notwithstanding, the Master stood with me and strengthened me, that by me the preaching might be fully known, and that all the Gentiles might hear. And I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. And the Master shall deliver me from every evil work, and will preserve me unto his heavenly kingdom, to whom be glory forever and ever. Then he goes and mentions some people by name, and says that he even had to leave this Trophimus that we mentioned earlier, left him at Miletus sick. Guess he couldn't heal at this point. For some reason, Yahweh chose not to heal him. He says, do your diligence to come before winter. And then these other people greet you and all the brethren and so forth. That's an assessment. That's the last of the man that we read of. He was ideally equipped for his work. You know, in this man, three great cultures were merged. Think about it. He was a Roman citizen. He could have easy entry into the Roman world. He was steeped in Greek culture as well. I mean, if he goes all the way up into, you know, Asia Minor there and all the Greek nations up there and was able to do a work, obviously he knew the culture. He knew the language. He could convey his ideas across a Hellenistic world. But even more important, he was a Pharisee. Strictest of the Jews. He had Yahweh's law inside and had points of contact in the synagogues of the empire. But it's not his affliction that we admire. It's how he handled it. That's what we admire from this man. He's just phenomenal. And that's the greatness we appreciate. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, it's an encouragement to each of us. And especially as we come on Yahweh's feasts and we seem to face more and more trials, the closer they get, because we know that there's the evil one out there who would like nothing more than to have us turn away from the truth. 2 Corinthians 4:8, we are troubled on every side. I'm like, we're getting hit this way, that way, every which way. Yet, not distressed. We're perplexed. Yes, we don't understand it. Why all these things happen right now? But we're not in despair. We're persecuted. But we're not standing alone. We're not forsaken. We're cast down. But we're not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body the dying of our Master Yahshua, that the life also of Yahshua might be made manifest in our body. For we which live are always delivered unto death for Yahshua's sake, that the life also of Yahshua might be made manifest in our mortal flesh. So death works in us, but life in you. Always be ready. Always be ready for whatever might come. You never know. But never blame Paul. Never blame Yahweh. Paul never blamed Yahweh for his afflictions. He never shook his fist at the heavens in frustration. But there was another dimension to his perspective I think we need to look at. He viewed whatever happened to him through the eyes of faith, and that remarkable trait puts him among the giants, Moses. You know, the ones in Hebrews chapter 11, the hall of fame of those who had unbelievable faith. Like Moses, who left Egypt not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. This man observed hard times, and he endured them by focusing on what's important. He used his trials as reminders that, hey, I'm just a mortal man here, trying to do a work, trying to stay faithful. When your heart is right, you can do that. Focusing on the unseen helps us endure what would otherwise, I think, be unbearable. That's what Paul did. He kept strong in times of trouble because he had this faith. And in all that he learned the greatest lessons of all. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Messiah? I have more claim to this title than they, he says. This is a silly game, but look at this list. I have worked harder than any of them, he says. I'm paraphrasing 2 Corinthians 11. I have served more prison sentences. I have been beaten more times. I have suffered, or faced, I should say, death again and again. I have been beaten the regulation 39 stripes by the Jews 5 different times. I have been beaten with rods 3 times. I've been stoned once. I've been shipwrecked 3 times. I've been 24 hours in the open sea trying to survive. In my trials, I've been in constant danger from rivers and floods, from bandits, from my own countrymen, from pagans. I have faced danger in city streets, danger in the desert, danger on the high seas, danger among false believers. I have known exhaustion. I've known pain. Long vigils, hunger, thirst, doing without meals, cold and lack of clothing. On top of all that, I've got the concerns of all these assemblies out there and everyone pulling in a different direction. Now, on top of that, he's got a thorn in the flesh. If the man were alive today, I don't think he'd care to have us tell him congratulations for all that you did. No, he'd say, you don't understand. I'm not strong. The one who pours his power on me is strong. My strength comes from my weakness. And that isn't false modesty. He really believes it. And we need you too. The lesson of this man named Paul is that he grasped what it meant to serve Yahweh. His pride was knocked right out of him, and a genuine humility was put in its place. Arrogant preachers have no business at pulpits. The strength of the message comes from Yahweh, not man, not the pompous individual. The Pharisees never got it. Many today don't get it either. How about us? Are you despairing because of the pressures put on you in life? Well, guess what? You're right where Yahweh wants you to be. Rather than fight back with a human reaction, just surrender to Yahweh. He says, I need your help now. I can't do it anymore. Tell Yahweh you're completely in his hands. If Paul could do it, so can we. You know, the preseason Passover, I should say the pre-Passover season, has been particularly difficult this year. For many. Many have been in tears and unable to take too much more. Discouraged, devastated many by life's tribulations, unable to sleep at night, wondering what's going to hit next. Well, at times of deepest trial, tribulation, we can rejoice. Because we know we're on the right track. Why do we know that? Look at Job. Why did Job not turn against Yahweh? Because he knew. He knew what was going on. Job 1, verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of Elohim came to present themselves before Yahweh, and guess what? There's Satan right there. Right there among them. What do? Time comes, the appointed time comes, we present ourselves before Yahweh. Who's there with us? The evil one's there. Hasatan. When people come to present themselves to worship Yahweh at the appointed times, you can be sure they're going to have company. Zechariah chapter 3 is prophetic. High priest Yahshua. Let's read that. Again, chapter 3, verse 1, we see the same thing. And he showed me Joshua, the high priest, standing before the angel of Yahweh. And guess what? Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. Zechariah 3, 1. And Yahweh said unto Satan, Yahweh rebuke you, Satan. Even Yahweh that has chosen Jerusalem rebuke you. Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? Satan was there, even in that prophetic insight that we see there. The adversary hates Yahweh's days. He hates our obedience to him. He'll do all he can to discourage us and destroy our resolve. You and I need to realize that fact. Take it for what it is, to know it's going to be that way, and that we're never going to be able to handle Satan alone. We've slugged our way through life enough. It's time we say, Yahweh, I come before you. I can't come through. I need your help. If you don't open that door, it isn't going to open up. My life is in your hands. I'm too weak to handle what I'm being faced with. And Yahweh, believe me, will answer that prayer. And then we need to ask Yahweh to forgive our shortcomings, our unintentional sins. And if we do all of this, brethren, we are going to be prepared for Passover. And this is the time we need to focus on Yahweh and to be ready, because we're not to take that Passover unworthily. And that means we need a lot of introspection and looking at our lives to see where can we improve, where can we make changes, because we need to be strong. We know that these are exercises not only in humility but in faith, and that's what it all comes together when we come before Yahweh and we grow and we mature in his truth, that we can take this truth to others. And that's what our job is, to make others aware that there is a better way in this life. There's no dead end when you believe in Yahweh. So let's keep this in mind as we prepare for the coming days ahead. May Yahweh bless you.